I'll try not to keep you too long because it's a meeting at short notice and it's actually discussing what we do with you that's really important. But it's probably a good idea just to discuss the background first so that all of you got a clear idea about why I'm here from the Open Rights Group, talking about Scottish ID system, why this issue suddenly arose and what we think is really going on. So I'll take you right back to the beginning. In 2005, the Labour Party passed some legislation in Scotland allowing a registration scheme and starting to build the basis of a identity scheme in Scotland. Since then, the legislation has allowed the creation of something called, well, I say the legislation is not entirely governed by legislation. They've created something called Scottish Entitlement Cards, which is basically a kind of identity card that you can get. For instance, if you're entitled to free school meals, or if you are elderly and are entitled to bus journeys for free, you're allowed to get these identity cards called National Identity Card in Scotland, and that then allows you to access these services. The services record your activity, but the really critical thing is that the card is linked to a unique citizen registration number. And this number, this UCRN, this unique citizen registration number, is able to then link your activities across all services that use the Scottish Entitlement Card. And that's the way it's been for a while. There's been a sort of nascent Scottish identity card and identity database ready to kind of grow. And in fact, if any of you were born in Scotland, you've already been assigned a unique citizen registration number at birth, or at least on your birth certificate record. So that's the beginnings of it. You're assigned this number, and if you use the cards are linked to the number, and the services you access are linked to the number. This is basically the same in most aspects as the Labour ID cards proposals that were going on in 2000 across the UK. The major difference is that the ID card for the UK did include biometric details in order for you to get it, and they also wanted to charge you money for it, and this is free. So the cost isn't there and the biometrics isn't there, but all of the data linking is there. And when No2ID and others were running campaigns against ID cards, the thing that they were really worried about was the data linking. Yes, the biometrics was bad. Compulsion was certainly bad. But the thing they really didn't like was the big database, which was going to link everybody's data up. And we'll come on to why that is a problem in a bit. But let's just look now at what's happening in Scotland, because we've got a particular change right now, which is that we have this, in Scotland there is this NHS registration database, which contain, if you go to your GP and you register with your GP, they take your name and address and they put you onto the NHS National Register, which is a bit different to how it used to be, but basically it's a data set that's used by the NHS to keep track of NHS patients using different services across the NHS in Scotland. So at some point, the Scottish government looked around to say to itself, well, what are we going to do now to sort of continue to link data and to build more data linking and data sharing capabilities? And they looked around for a way of finding everybody's name and address as a basis for the next step. And the obvious place to go was the NHS registration database, because 30% of Scots are already on it. And the consultation that's running now, the proposal is to use that data as the basis for sort of this registration system, and attach everybody on that NHS registration database to their unique citizen record number, registration number. So the UCRN, which is already there for entitlement cards, which means bus passes, library passes, student entitlement cards, now that gets attached to your NHS data, and about 100 further Scottish agencies would potentially be able to use the registration database as well, which would mean then each of the 100 Scottish authorities that might use the system would attach any of their users' data to the UCRN to keep track of their data in the NHS database. So what you have effectively in this database, this NHS database, is a national identity register. Everybody has their name and address mapped in that data source as much as possible, and that is available then to every Scottish authority to use as much as possible. That is pretty much a national identity system. It might not at first mean that everybody is on it all of the time, but that clearly is the kind of ambition. And the entitlement card itself becomes a kind of de facto identity card, even if it's not compulsory to use. For some users, it's nearly impossible not to use. If you want to have free bus journeys as a pensioner, you either use the entitlement card or you don't. But in any case, that's just the top end. The big thing to worry about is the database. So what does this database do with all this potential linking that the UCRN plus person can produce? As I say, it opens up this idea of data sharing, which, as I've already mentioned, was the objective of the UK's identity card scheme. At the moment, we're being told this might be used for tax, for finding people who should be paying income tax. And we've also been told that it could be used for chasing people whose use of the NHS as a foreign citizen needs to be rebilled, and they've gone missing in some way, and they want to find the data of who's not been paid for in the NHS and chase that abroad. And that's essentially what you might call categories around fraud, error, and debt in two specific instances. But that kind of fraud, error, and debt chasing, once you have everybody connected in this way, all their data connected, you could try to use it in the same way for anything, any kind of fraud, error, and debt. So that's one area. Another area that data sharing is often talked about is research. And that's to say you do research on the whole Scottish population to see what they are like. And the third is what is called tailored services, which is using the data to profile people to decide whether they're in need, whether they're some way failing as human beings, or whether they maybe are being paid too much benefit because, you know, frankly, their education's too good, and why should they therefore be paid benefit, because can't they get a job? There's those kinds of things. That's what tailored services is about. Now, where do I get these categories from? Where have I just invented them? No, these are the categories of discussion that are being discussed currently in Whitehall at the UK level. So these are the kinds of areas that the UK government are thinking about in regards to data sharing. Now, they haven't been spelt out by the Scottish government in this consultation about the sort of data sharing that they may be enabled. And I think that's pretty deliberate. I don't think that the Scottish Civil Service wants to admit all of the possibilities that come with data sharing. Probably doesn't want to describe all of these things to the SNP, because some of them might not be the sort of political flavour of the month. On the other hand, I suspect a lot of these things were spelt out to the last Labour administration. They were probably pretty aware of it. And certainly the civil service is going to know that, you know, maybe Scotland feels a bit too left-wing at the moment to go down this road, but, you know, it can, once it's got the capabilities, it can keep all those policies in a drawer, and in 10 or 15 years, when the right people come along, it can pull them back out and try all over again. So let's just think what data sharing means. To take that first area of fraud, error, and debt, which we know the Scottish government's already interested in, the sorts of things you could do with data sharing might be, for instance, you could decide whether you could look at somebody's bus records, for instance, see where they've been, and decide whether they are maybe moving about too much while on job seekers allowance, for instance. Maybe they're going to a beach, or maybe they're like not doing something which looks like job related, job applications enough. Or maybe they suggest that you aren't really living where you say you're living. Or maybe it suggests that, maybe even suggests that you might be cohabiting with somebody because you're making the same journeys as somebody else, and they seem to all end up at their house rather than yours, and therefore maybe one of you isn't entitled to the benefits that you've been claiming. So lots of things like that you could do with data sharing, where you compare data in some way with some activity of various people, and you can find when they seem to be doing things which are not what the state thinks you should be doing. Another example, which I'm sure would spring to lots of counsellors' sort of minds, would be that you could see where children go home to see whether they really are in the right catchment area that their parents claimed when they applied for school, and weren't able to get into the right school, kind of thing. This sort of thing local councils would love. So that's fraud, error, and debt. It's not just about big tax avoidance, it's about catching little people potentially through the use of all of this personal data. The sort of questions around research, I think we don't need to deal with too much. It's not a terrible thing to do research with government data, but if you're going to do that, you need to think through the implications of that data sharing. Are you actually doing the right sort of privacy techniques? Are you making sure that the data is really going to be used in the sort of ways that you think it's going to be used, or are you creating risks? And the fact is, at the very least, you don't need to link everybody's data all of the time just in order to do research on data. There are other ways you can make those sorts of comparisons without creating a hugely intrusive database. This third thing, this tailored services idea, is very much in vogue at Westminster and Whitehall at the moment. What does that mean? It kind of means you would say something like, maybe you check the educational achievement, the benefits of somebody, maybe their criminal record, and you decide whether a certain category of people look like people who will be on benefit too long, or maybe they won't be very good at looking after their children because other people with the same profile sometimes don't look after their children well enough. And these kinds of ways of targeting and profiling people will be very tempting to any bureaucracy because it wants to reduce risk, but it also has the effect of stigmatizing people, because just because one person with a particular education achievement or background looks like they are a problem does not mean everybody who fits that profile is equally a problem. So it kind of risks stigmatizing people through profiling, as well as this having this potential to help. In any case, these kinds of problems are highly, dealing with problems in this kind of way is highly unproven. It has all those problems around false positives, false negatives, giving yourself too much work to do because there are lots of people who look like they're problem X, but only one or two of them really are. Has all of those sorts of problems that we're familiar with in other social areas. But it also has some issues, I think, with incentivizing the kinds of means testing approach to government services that we see already. Where we have currently means testing that is based on what your income is, that sort of thing, you could do it with data. You could say, let's use the data to find the people that are entitled to benefits rather than just giving the benefits to too many people. So again, you can reduce the social spending, target the benefits even more, but of course that risks that the benefits don't reach the people it really needs because you're narrowing them so much. But these are attractive arguments to politicians when they've got to make savings and when they don't want to spend money on people who are looking increasingly unpopular and like a burden on the state. So you have to be very, very careful with these sorts of ideas and policy. When those approaches have been discussed at Whitehall with civil society, they've pointed out those problems, and it's made the government at least slow down in what it's trying to do, because it realises this is actually quite complicated. It isn't something you can do very, very simply. And I think what's missing here right now in this debate is that discussion at all. It does not seem to have been that discussion. Do we really want data sharing? Does it pose individual risks to people and their information being looked at inappropriately? When you've got 100 plus agencies, plus however many non-state agencies being able to access the data, does it start to cause and deliver problems for people in terms of the policies that legislators will be suggested they should seek from civil service and so on? So what do we do now? I think the first thing we need to do is to show the SNB government that they're being told a certain amount of the truth, not the whole truth. You might say they're being misled, but at the very least you have to say they're not having the whole idea fully explained to them. We also need to make the SNP government, who ultimately decide whether this goes ahead or not, that at least some of their newfound support is concerned about this issue. That, just like ID cards, this is not something which everyone's simply going to agree to. So how do we do that? How do we do that? Well, firstly, we have to show that it genuinely is a parallel to the identity cards system. We have to show precisely why it is the same. And that is about the data linking. It is about the unique identifiers. It is about the use of this to identify people across government data sets. Secondly, we need to demand a full public debate, because that is a very reasonable thing to ask for, to have that national discussion. And given that there are privacy concerns, a responsible government should allow that discussion to take place. And thirdly, we do need to mobilise political opinion. And that doesn't mean the whole of society. We don't have to persuade the whole of society right now that ID cards are on the table and the identity databases a threat to everyone. We have to mobilise political opinion. Those people who are already very engaged with Scottish politics post-referendum. That means groups like Commonweal, Radical Independence, and the political parties that have shown so much growth, like the SNP and the Scottish Greens. You can help by getting involved and talking to those groups directly, explaining to them that this is a problem, attending their meetings. You can also take traditional routes, meeting your MSP, writing to the paper about the Scottish ID database, asking for questions to be asked. You can take the debate online, inform people through your own blogs, through Twitter and Facebook about what's going on. And finally, you can do a really simple thing, which is respond to the consultation. So has everyone here responded to the consultation yet? A lot of people have, not everyone here has. Do that. It, off the scotland.openrightsgroup.org site, it take you literally 2 minutes.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, you say it's very limited and the questions are very
terrible,
limited and constrained. So I will do it. But
so what we've done is we've set this up firstly to ask, let people not answer the questions that they've put, which are useless, but to just say, this is a big problem. You are opening up a lot of questions here. It is not right to sneak this through secondary legislation. You must have a full public debate. And I think they've already got a couple of hundred people telling them that. That's going to be embarrassing. You know, it doesn't win the whole thing, but it's embarrassing for a consultation report to have to say, we had the majority of people who responded to this consultation were members of the public who said this should be subject to primary legislation,
yeah,
and shouldn't be implemented this way.
So
that's why to do it. The other thing is that we've set it up so those responses go to your MSP as well. So they get informed in the process. They have to start thinking about this. And they're writing us back rather dumb letters. But that, again, that starts a debate happening. Basically, I mean, Scotland and the UK were both against ID cards and the UK ID database. We can make it clear and that they're the same thing, and win the debate. Stop it. Thank you very much.